Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. I am Jeff Crushell, the con man, right there behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, go to our website, crushperformance.com. That's crush with a K, performance.com. You can get our newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, get all of our social media hookups there as well. And you can also send us any questions, comments, or smart remarks you might have, and we love them all. By the way, we answer every message we get. And if you have a topic or something you'd like us to investigate or to respond or provide information on, just write to us. Honestly, we do respond to every single note that we get. And sometimes we've dedicated segments or entire episodes to your ideas. Love them. Keep them coming. You guys are getting us thinking as much as I hope we're getting you thinking. Today, we're thinking about the mental game of sport. We're going to talk with our good friend John Stevenson, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant. He just does some great, great work in the sporting world for sure, but also in the arena of everyday life, which is so important. The mental side of human performance, whether it's inside of sport, business, school, scholastics, music, whatever you're doing, is so important. And yet, maybe misunderstood, certainly underutilized, and most certainly undertrained. And it's very, very trainable. And that's what I really want to get to today. How trainable is the mental game? Because I just don't think we're doing a good enough job of tapping into that side of human performance. And without question, if you listen to the show, you know where I stand on this. The next areas that are going to unleash new levels of human performance are technology in terms of equipment and surfaces and, you know, the implements that we use inside of sport and everyday life, but also the technology that's allowing us to better monitor and understand how the body works. And I'm talking today mostly about the brain. There's new technologies that have never been available before that are allowing us to better understand how your mind works and how we can train it to work even better. It's fantastic stuff. And of course, the second area right alongside technology is the mental game. We just aren't quite there yet. When it comes to the physical side, you've heard me say this hundreds of times, we're at a biological ceiling. Faster, higher, stronger, technical, tactical, skill development, talent, the acquisition of skills. We know about this stuff. All we need to do right now is make sure that we have the right environment and the right process for the individuals who we're working with to tap into their potential. And it takes time. It takes time and planning, don't get me wrong, and that's why so many of us out there never truly reach our potential. We haven't been inside of great environments that allow us to develop at our own paces and our own strengths. And that's a big part of it, organizational performance and the environments we're in for certain. But the mental game, we just haven't had an opportunity to really tap into that side of it. It's coming right now. And at the highest levels of sport, the intuitive athletes, the intuitive coaches, and most certainly the organizations that truly get what it takes to achieve human maximum performance, they're starting down this path, and it's all exciting. We're doing it with our athletes selectively. Some people just aren't ready for it because there's other things that you need to address. But I'm telling you right now, when everything is in tune and aligned, there's such a great opportunity ahead of us for pushing human performance forward. And that's what I want to talk about today with John Stevenson. We're going to talk about the mental game, some of the technology that's now available and we're using, and why it's so important for us to better understand this side of the human element of performance, because it's human across the board. And when we look at organizational performance, we get so fixated sometimes, and I shouldn't even say sometimes, it's most of the time, on the easy stuff, the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, the stuff that is tangible, where we can see the outcomes right away. That's what human beings are attracted to: bigger, faster, stronger, that kind of stuff. those tangible things where we see the difference. And that's what keeps you going. That's motivating. Don't get me wrong. That's a big, big part of the puzzle. But we have to think about the long game here because it does take time. There's a process to development, right from grassroots right up to high performance, to the point, let's say, where an athlete decides that they want to pursue sport or music or chess or science or business as their life endeavor. Whatever you're doing, the principles are very similar. It's just a matter of what you do to hone your skills and become a master of your craft. That's the key. And that's what we're missing for the most part. Right now, I do believe across the board, if we look at the sporting world right now, let's just focus on the sporting world. If we look across the board, there's those great performers out there that would just, you know, that top 10%, maybe 20%, probably closer to 10 though, that would just be great at what they do no matter what happened. But there's a big portion of the population, and I'm talking elite competitive athletes who had to battle and grind and survive just to get there. Are the best athletes playing at the top of the game? No, they're not. Don't kid yourself. They are not. Don't get me wrong. The people who are there are incredibly special. But if we go back to the developmental levels, I will say this once again, we are truly destroying more talent than we're creating. It is such a dysfunctional model that by the time athletes rise to the point where they're focusing and thinking about high-performance sport, they're just the ones who survived. And it's unfortunate because I think we're missing the boat for a lot of athletes out there who could have been absolutely great. And it's just because of the dysfunction of the developmental systems that are out there right now. We have a lot of work to do if we're going to straighten up this ship and correct the course. But it starts with conversations. And if we're going to really tap into human potential, we have to have this holistic, progressive approach throughout the lifetime of the athlete. We know there's certain windows of opportunity for developing speed and stamina, coordination, skill development. That age group of 9, 10, 11, and 12 years old, it's the most important age group in any developmental model on this planet. Because that's where skill acquisition happens. Now listen, if those athletes haven't had the right experiences before that window, they can't truly maximize their skill development. And what does that look like? What is the pre-skill acquisition window supposed to look like? Well, run, have fun, play, do a bunch of different things. Just become competent. You know, tumble. You know, go in the playground and on the bars and play with your buddies and play tag and play a bunch of different games. Set these young athletes up for success when they get to those important ages, 9, 10, 11, and 12 and onwards. If they have success there, one of two great things is going to happen. One, they're going to stay in sport forever because they're going to love it. There's nothing a human being likes better than getting better. Getting better is just what it's all about. How far can you go? Listen to me carefully. We don't know. If you think that you can predict whether you're going to be an all-star great, you're sadly mistaken. You can have that dream, and I commend it, and I encourage it. Dream big. All for it 100%. The power of thinking big is powerful. Let's just face it. What I'm saying is, if you think you can predict whether you're going to get there or not right now, that's a crapshoot. We're very, very poor at predicting whether an athlete is going to have success at the highest level. But on the flip side of that coin, we're as bad or worse at predicting who won't. So do not let anybody tell you you can't until you go through the process and figure it out. So we don't like to predict if we can. We like to set that goal, point that compass, and go for it. We talk about it in my book, The Performance Plan. That whole book was about, where do you start? Because that's the big question I've always gotten from everybody. Where do you start? Or, man, if I'd known that when I was that age, I'd be so different right now. And so when I sat down figuring out, okay, I do want to write a book, but everything's been written. What do you write about? My athletes came to me and said, Jeff, just, hey, why don't you just, those conversations we had about, where should we start? What should we do now? Tell people where to start. That's what the book, The Performance Plan, is all about. Just getting on a starting platform and pointing that compass and thinking about the process you need to go through. That's the ticket, everybody. That's the secret sauce. There's no magic bullets. There's no secret formulas. There's just good, solid, fundamental process. So don't let anybody anybody tell you you can't until you go through the process, and be very, very careful. Be very, very careful about getting patted on the back and praised for your greatness, because that's as risky as telling somebody that they can't do it. Just go through the process, follow the plan, and see how far you can take it. Surround yourself with good people. Ask great questions. And understand that it takes a holistic approach. In our models, we think about the player first. What does this player have to do right now to be successful at the level they're at? And we could be talking about our Olympic athletes or our pro athletes in any sport, or our developmental guys, college, junior level players, or our developing high school, junior high players, or our grassroots kids. What do they need to do right now in order to be successful in the future? Let's take a nine-year-old. When we get together with a group of nine-year-olds or a particular nine-year-old, we look at, okay, so where are they at right now? What have they done to this point, up to 9 years of age? And, you know, what's the big dream? Of course, we know what the big dream is going to be. And rightfully so, man. Go to the big leagues. I want to play in the show, or I want to wear that flag. I want to represent my country. You know, whatever it might be, have a big goal. I love it. There's nothing better than having a big, juicy goal to chase down and dream about. But point that compass and forget about it. Let's get back to where you're at and let's plan the next steps. For a nine-year-old, we go, okay, look, where are they at right now? What do we need to do? Let's say cardiovascular. Let's really take the next little while and build some coordination and really get in shape. Okay, let's just say that's our plan. But that being said, while we're doing that immediately at this point in time, we're already thinking 3 years down the road. What's that nine-year-old going to look like when they're 19? Because if we do the wrong things when they're 9 years old, we're lowering their ceiling of potential when they're 19. And if we do drastically the wrong things, we can't get that potential back. Do not kid yourself. This is not something you can recapture. These windows of opportunity in human development, once they're gone, they're gone. They're like the ticking of a clock. We just lost 10 seconds. And either those 10 seconds were productive or they're lost. Either way, we can't get them back. We can look back and learn from them. That's absolutely important. But you need to be thinking ahead of the curve. One of the big problems with specialization right now, right? Specialization. Think about it. With the greatest of intentions, we're throwing our young people into all in. Into an endeavor, a sport, or maybe a craft, music, drama, whatever it might be. But, and I guess with the greatest of intentions of giving them an advantage, it makes sense to go all in and, you know, be the best hockey player right now. But here's the problem with that. At 9 years old, focusing on one sport is devastating to future performance. And when I say devastating, I'm talking about end game kind of stuff. We know that specializing before the age of 10 in just about any endeavor limits the ceiling of potential when these athletes start to mature. And that's why we like to think ahead and we like to have this holistic approach. So in our programs, if you listen to the show at all, you know what our top four priorities are for human performance. Recovery, quality recovery, recuperation, and rest. And sleep is the number one factor for human performance. Make no mistake. Sleep is number one. If you're getting better, all things equal, if you're getting better sleep than your competition, you will rule the day. There's no question about that. Irrefutable. Now, match that with good nutrition and hydration. Priority number two. And then the setup, the posture, and the function, and the range of motion of the human body, the symmetry. That's your setup. And if your setup is off, well, number one, you'll never perform at your potential. And two, a bad setup will increase your risk of injury. So posture is our number three priority. Number four, movement. Teach your athletes to move. And I'm talking no sports specificity here at all. I'm talking about just teaching them how to move. And then you can work them into whatever sport they want to participate in. But teaching them to move will help them in every single endeavor they do. Every single sport is based on pure movement. We don't teach movements, unfortunately. And that's where a good warm-up period is so, so important. No matter what level you're working at, you can turn your 7-minute, 12-minute, 20-minute warm-up into an incredibly valuable training period every time you're together with your athletes. That's a conversation for another day. But this holistic approach is so important. Those are our top priorities. But in the big picture, everything has to lead towards increased performance in sport. Our coaches are limited by the athletic abilities of the athletes. Now, we're not so worried about this, particularly in the younger age groups, because they're just putting things together. They're growing, they're learning. We shouldn't be worried about outcomes here in any way, shape, or form. But the coaches are still very, very limited based on the athletic abilities of the kids. So the coaching has to match what the kids can do. Now, fast forward a bit where athletes start getting serious about their sports. 13, 14, 15, 16 years of age, they start honing in and deciding, you know, where they want to focus their efforts. We can coach them till the cows come home, but if they don't have the athletic prowess, the athletic abilities to do what the coaches need them to do to become better players, they can't do it. You can coach a skill all day long and you can get good to a point. But is it going to be a point that's good enough to take your athlete to the next level? Probably not. Listen to me. A coach's ability to develop a player is limited by the athletic abilities of that player, period. And unfortunately, if you look at our developmental systems, we don't address the athlete nearly enough. And I'm just talking about the basic fundamentals of coordination, agility, movement, cardiovascular, maybe even just fundamental strength moves. These should be worked into the practice plans in the developmental ages as much as they are with our professional guys. And I know time is limited, but if we really were going to do it right, if we really were going to look at the long game, we'd spend more time at the younger levels working on things that might have nothing to do with the game and have a lot to do with developing the athletes. And there's lots of fun ways to do that for sure. But if you want to maximize the potential of your players, you have to maximize the potential of the athlete first. So it's the athlete before the player. And inside of that, there are a lot of things that you need to address. Flexibility, cardiovascular, strength, agility, speed, power, visual training for every single sport, nutrition, hydration, injury rehab, posture, of course, rest recoveries are number one. But the mental game. The mental game is so, so important. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about coming up with John Stevenson, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant. We're going to look at how technology is allowing us to tap into and better understand and train our athletes' brains real time. Exciting stuff. Stick around, everybody. That's coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kerschell, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kerschell here. We're your weekly source for performance information. Crushperformance.com is the website, our newsletter, the podcast. Get all the hookups to the world of human performance. And on social media, if you're on Twitter, follow us at Jeff Crush. On all other social media platforms, our YouTube channel, Instagram, and also Facebook, you can search Crush Performance and find us there. Send us any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to investigate for sure. Today, we are talking about the all-important mental game of sport. And we're joined right now by Crush favorite, our good friend John Stevenson of Zone Performance, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant. John, thanks for joining us today. I'm really glad you can make it.
Thank you again, Crush, for having me on your show.
Yeah, very excited and always, always a pleasure talking to you, John. Registered psychologist, mental performance consultant, and it's a big, big part of sport, John. Maybe we'll start there. You know, one of the things we've been trying to do here over the last year is get people to recalibrate their thinking when it comes to human performance. We're so fixated on skill development and competition that I think in the long run, people fail to see that we're probably lowering the ceiling of potential. In our programs, you know this, if you listen to the show, everybody, our priorities in terms of, you know, athletic performance, human performance, are written in stone. Our four top priorities are rest, recovery, sleep, nutrition, hydration. Then from the functional standpoint, we look at range of motion, posture, and then we start focusing on movement. But John, don't get me wrong. The psychology part of it is huge. It is such a huge, huge part of it. And I think for the most part, we underestimate its value in terms of human performance. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you look at the Patriots this past weekend. I bet you they would say the reason why they've had so much success is it's a mindset. It's a culture. It's, you know, if you look at any of the top businesses, not just in the sports world, but it just in general, it's a mindset that is permeated throughout the whole organization. And that's what allows people to succeed.
When we talk about mental performance consultant, of course, we know the focus is always on individual and individual health mindset. But you just mentioned something that I think is really, really important, the culture. This is sort of like the mental approach for an organization, which is so, so important when we're trying to develop a culture and getting people comfortable fitting into a culture. Everybody's got to have the same mindset and approach.
Absolutely. They have to be all on board. And I think, you know, our good friend Jacques Dallaire, you know, he has a model that I've used a lot with my performance clients, whether they be in the military, whether they be, you know, in sports world or in the medical field. But A times B equals C. You know, A is his Coach Belichick's phrase, know your job, do your job, enjoy your job. And that's all of the factors that will allow you as an individual and as a team, as an organization to, you know, you have to keep your focus on that. And then there's all of the factors, the B, the uncontrollables, as Jacques would say, and then the, which equals the results. And a lot of the times people often get caught up with the uncontrollables or they're so results orientated that they don't understand that, believe it or not, the more you focus on the results, the less likely you're going to get them, because then you're not paying attention to what you need to be doing in that moment.
Yeah.
And I think once you get people on board and they understand that, and Coach Belichick has done that very well with the Patriots, that you're just responsible for your job, but there's a mission, there's a culture, there's a statement. Everybody's on that same path. They have a very clear goal as to where they want to go, but then it's very process focused rather than outcome focused.
Yeah, so important, and I like it. And that goes for every aspect of life. Anywhere humans are trying to accomplish a goal or work towards something, that is just a great, great approach. We're talking with John Stevenson, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant from Zone Performance. You can check out his great website, zoneperformance.ca. John, this is such an important conversation. And, you know, I guess when I sit back and was getting ready for this conversation, I was thinking about our priorities for performance. And I think our focus, you know, has been more on the physical side, you know, getting athletes and people prepared to reach their physical potential. But if the mind isn't right, none of that matters. So you got this teeter-totter here. I think it comes down to really understanding the individuals and being aware of where an athlete might be at. You and I had an interesting conversation the other day talking about stress levels and anxiety in sport. It's higher than even in the general population. It's really important for coaches and parents and athletes to be aware of this. What would be some of the telltale signs, Johnny, or maybe some of the warning signs you might look out for to maybe sort of give an indicator that anxiety or the mental state's not quite where it needs to be?
Boy, that's a great question.
It's a big one too. So we'll throw it out there and maybe work through it.
Well, I mean, I've had a lot of parents over the years where all of a sudden things that maybe something an individual could handle in the past, now it's a lot more upsetting, or, you know, they're more... they're not able to handle it as well. It could be tying in that you all of a sudden you start seeing people sleep more, or their mood is really up and down. I know for a lot of the clients that I see, all of a sudden anxiety levels are not just within that sport, but it's starting to spread into all, you know, facets or areas of their life. That's some of the things that I've seen in my office where it's, you know, it may have started off with one particular thing, but now it's more globalized, it's more generalized, or you're just starting to see people not respond as like they did in the past, not handle it as well.
Right.
I think, you know, in the corporate world, you start to see burnout, you know, people might be starting to literally show the physical symptoms of, you know, whether it might be anxiety or depression. That's some of the telltale signs.
And it's interesting because once we see those warning signs, being aware of them, it's kind of like maybe we could go back, you know, and you and I have talked about this many times, the concussion and the state of concussions and head injuries right now. I mean, we know so much more now about those head injuries, how to deal with them, how to assess them properly, and, of course, how to deal with them long term. It's really raised the awareness and it's changed the entire approach to how we deal with those. And, of course, the stigma around that, you know, the tough guy sort of mentality is slowly meandering away, which is a good thing for sure.
We had a client yesterday, you know, Jeff, yes and no to what you're saying.
Okay.
I still think there's a lot of people out there that if you're not showing any physical symptoms like headaches or nauseousness or dizziness, there's still a lot of parents and people that think you're good to go back onto the playing surface.
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't realize is that your brain processing speed, your cognitive capacities, like your ability to focus, your ability to see things, you know, your ability to, your memory, these are all capacities that dramatically get reduced. And if you don't test for that, you can, you know, especially in a high level, you know, compact, you know, impact sport like hockey or football or lacrosse or soccer. Now, all of a sudden that athlete's going out and their brain is just not processing anywhere at the speed that it was. And that makes them even more vulnerable to a second concussion. And so that's where technology, I personally feel, can really make a big difference, because we can get a baseline and then we can see if that person, like we had literally a person, and I really admire this person, they flew in from Vancouver yesterday. Their son's a peewee player, and they've been working with us for quite some time, and they flew into Vancouver. He was doing a gap control. He's a defenseman. He fell on the ice, hit his head on the ice, on the back part of his head, and he came in and wanted to make sure that his brain processing speed and everything was good. And he was feeling fine. Like, he wasn't feeling any
right.
headaches or anything, but there's a situation where we can now truly reassure the athlete and the parent whether they're good or not good to go back onto the playing surface.
Yeah, so important. We're talking with John Stevenson, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant. John, this is a great conversation right now, and I guess it kind of maybe alludes to what I'm talking to. I mean, yes, and we've come this far, and to have this discussion, the discussion we're having right now, I think that's just a sign of how far we've come. But you're right, we got to get the word out there. So, I mean, for the average person, if you don't have any signs or symptoms, if you've fallen and hit your head and you're not dizzy, or you don't have any of those, you know, maybe common sort of symptoms, why would you even think you have a head injury, a brain injury? But it's not that simple, and that's why I like this for sure. And I guess it sort of takes us to the next level, which is the technology that's now available that's allowing us to better understand and map out the brain, but also treat these injuries in a whole new way.
Well, and you and I have talked a lot about this. I mean, I've had in the last 2 years approximately 20 adults that came into my office had been given a diagnosis of ADHD, and sure enough, they were having focus and memory issues, but the primary reason why they were having those was not as a result of ADD or ADHD, but the primary reason was they had had a concussion.
Hmm.
And the brain map that we do, the brain scan, allows us to see that what is truly going on with inside the brain, and allows us to see, you know, why the person might be experiencing the symptoms that they're experiencing.
See, fascinating. And if we go back to, I guess, maybe sort of the landmark a sort of incident for really recalibrating how we handle head injuries, it was a Sidney Crosby thing. It brought it into, I guess, the public eye. It was on the media everywhere. Pittsburgh handled it very, very well. But I do remember the interview with Sidney Crosby saying, look, I have no symptoms. I'm just not right. I can't, there's no words to describe how I'm feeling, but I'm just not right. And he sort of shared the story that they were in the locker room and they were just horsing around with the guys. And, you know what, hey, you know, one of the guys just, hey, good to see you back, Sid. You know, gave him a little push on the shoulder. He lost his balance. And he knew he lost his balance, but he couldn't communicate to his feet to get where they need to be to correct his balance. And that's sort of one of the things that makes it so dangerous going back without being clear at 100%, right?
Absolutely. And people have to understand that depending, because the brain is floating, right? And so depending, you might actually get the blow to the back of the head, but if the brain ricochets and hits up at the front part, well, whatever area of the brain gets, you know, gets bruised, that you can start to lose that particular function of the brain. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. To me, if you're playing in a contact sport, I think it's just nowadays, everything that you can do to make sure to establish a baseline at the beginning, no different like you do with physical fitness.
Right.
I mean, all the athletes, at the beginning of the year, they get a barometer as to where they are, their physical fitness. Well, it's the same thing you can do when people come in. We can, you know, do sequential memory. We can do episodic memory. We can do working memory, short-term memory. And then we can literally do a brain scan, and we can do things that can measure brain processing speed and peripheral awareness and make sure that, you know, we know where they're at, and then we can train it. That's the great thing. We can train it so they can make it even better, which allows them to be even safer on the playing field. And if they do happen to, you know, suspect that they've got a blow, now we've got the technology that allows us to see what's going on and make sure that they can return back to, you know, to play safely.
Oh, it's fantastic. And this is maybe a really important message to send. You can train the brain. We can literally now, with the technology that's now available, and you know, that goes to the brain scan and some of the great new technologies that we now have access to, we can see where certain parts of the brain are functioning and how they're functioning. But the greatest part of it is, we can train it. And John, when I was there going over my brain scan and talking about the new technology and some of the advances since I did it last, I'm even more fascinated. And one of the interesting things that came out of that conversation with you and your team there was the idea that, you know, when we were talking about depression, for example, and, you know, you can see depression on those brain maps. And instead of treating it with some medication, why not train it away? And it's doable, according to everything we talked about, that we can do now, which is fascinating to me.
Well, and the way I like to explain it, Jeff, is that there's a phrase, neurons that fire together, wire together.
I like it.
So if you have a thought pattern, and again, whether this be sport or business, so for example, going back to Jacques Dallaire's formula, if we're focusing, continuously focusing on something that's 100% directly out of our control, and we, you know, Jacques has this mental rule called rule number 4, your dominant thought determines how you feel, how you behave, and ultimately how you perform. So if I have this thought pattern, and just like I'm doing a bicep curl, I'm strengthening that connection, that muscle. If I continue to have that thought pattern about something that's beyond my control, well, what I'm literally doing is strengthening that neural pathway. And so I can take medication and it can make me feel better. I don't argue that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But my professional opinion is that you're treating the symptom, you're not treating the cause. And once you start to help people understand that it's not the person, place, or thing, but it's the thought about that, and really critically looking at that thought and learning how, what I teach is that you can have a thought and a feeling without that thought and feeling having you. That you realize that, because a lot of, you know, my athletes, a lot of people have this misconception that they, you know, they have ice water running through their veins. And that's not the case. They feel and they think, you know, I mean, we've just talked. I've got a young guy that's playing in the National Hockey League right now, Carter Hart. And it's not that Carter doesn't have thoughts or feelings, but he's learned how to respond to those thoughts and feelings rather than react. And he's done lots of mindfulness training. He's done lots of heart rate variability training. And the great thing about this type of training, Jeff, is that it's not John Stevenson per se. It's literally the science. We can actually see changes in the brain. Just like if you're doing weight training, you can actually see changes in the muscle fibers. Well, you, when you're doing this type of training now, that's one of the reasons why I'm such a huge fan of it, is because you can actually see changes in the nervous system when people are doing this.
Oh, such great stuff. It's technology that we've never had access to before. So I can't wait till we really have a chance to sink in and start developing athletes using these tools. Listen, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue this discussion and talk about much, much more with registered psychologist and mental performance consultant John Stevenson. Stick around, everybody. Lots more to come.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information with Jeff Crushell. Get in the action and text Crush at 10-12-60 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Today we are talking the mental game with John Stevenson of Zone Performance. John, I want to pick up right where we left off, a great conversation talking about the science that's now available and how we can use it. You know, there's a lot of applications here well outside of sport. We talk about kids, our first responders, the military. It's all very, very important and relevant. But one of the things that I think really struck me here recently, I was lucky enough to speak at winter meetings, and there was some data on the injury rates. Despite everything that we know and everything that we're doing, injury rates are on the rise in professional sport, which is really concerning to me. But one of the things that came up at winter meetings was the fact that anxiety was one of the main reasons that athletes are getting injured, which was alarming to me. It's one of the things that really stuck with me out of that whole weekend. Either we're not dealing with it well enough, or maybe we just don't understand it well enough.
And there's things that people can do. That's the, maybe this sounds awful, but it's the sad part in that there are things that we can do and show the athletes that can really help with symptoms like anxiety, depression. And that's, you know, we have the technology now that can truly, you know, show a client, and more importantly, what we can do to help them feel better and feel better soon.
We're talking with John Stevenson, registered psychologist from Zone Performance. You can check out his great information at zoneperformance.ca. John, such an important conversation here. The mental part of the game is as important as the physical part of the game, maybe even more so, because your mental state can directly impact your physical state and, of course, the outcomes of what you're trying to do. So I think there is a very, very fine line between which one is a priority at any given time. And I think it's an individual basis. Johnny, in our developmental models, if we look at the great long-term athlete development program from Sport Canada, I think one of the greatest sporting models out there, with the NCCP, the coaching development model that runs right alongside of it. There is little to no talk about anxiety, depression. There's a little bit, don't get me wrong, but we don't have strategies. I believe it should be something that we're working into our developmental models, don't you?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I get that question all the time from parents, when should we start this? And there's still, Jeff, I'm working with several, you know, minor hockey league teams right now, and there's still that perception out there by the parents, particularly the parents, like, why are we bringing in a mental performance psychologist? What, like, you know, like a consultant, why are we bringing someone in like this? And I always, you know, there's still that conception out there, misperception that, you know, if you're going to your strength and conditioning coach, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong. Or if you're going to your nutritionist, that there's something wrong. And it's the same with my program. It's that there's, you know, it's a strength-based, it's a skills-based program.
Right.
And to me, you know, I go back, I look at the Carter Hearts. Like, Carter started with me when he was 9 years old, and learning just how to focus better and learning how to be more physically and mentally calm, learning skills like mental rehearsal or visualization. And they've used these skills not just for their sports, but for other areas, academic performance as well. And so to me, I want to introduce it as soon as possible, because the more opportunity they get to practice this, the stronger and stronger they get with this skill. So I've always drawn it up like a wheel, Jeff, and the hub of the wheel, and you and I have talked a lot about this, is their lifestyle, their nutrition, their hydration, their sleep, all the key components. And then I divide the wheel up into four quadrants: your physical, your technical, your tactical, and mental. And if one part of that wheel is bigger than the other, well, how well is that wheel going to roll? And so, excuse me, right from the onset, you know, I look at each of those quadrants as they're all reliant on each other, but they're all working together. And I think right from the get-go, just doing a simple skill of teaching someone how to focus better can really make a big difference right from the onset.
I agree, and I really, really like that. That is a simple model, I think, that people can really relate to, John, because it is balance. And the one thing that I think I want to make perfectly clear here, it's a skills-based thing, performance. It's no different than training for speed, power, or strength. You can get better at how you use your mind, your thought process, your focus, your concentration, your rebound. And I think you said, John, if you can repeat this for me, because I was writing something else down when you said it, but it's not how you react, it's how you respond. What was that saying you said? We don't react, we...
Well, I call it being response able.
Yeah, responding.
It's not that you, you know, like I always joke about this, Jeff, but it's you know where my office is. If someone parks in my paid parking stall, well, it's not that I don't have a thought. It's not that I don't have a feeling. It's not that I don't have a sensation. You know, like right now, the weather is, you know, tremendously cold. It's not that we don't have thoughts or feelings or sensations, but we can learn how to respond to it in a way where it allows us to perform at our best. Yeah. And that, you know, a lot of the military slogans, Marines, the Navies, you know, improvise, adapt, and overcome. Well, it's a skill. You can learn that if a referee makes a bad call or the coach makes a decision that you think might be a tough one, it's not that those don't happen. But you have what I try to empower my clients with is they have a choice as to how they want to respond. So it's the outer game never determines the inner game. And they start to learn that. And the younger the age, the quicker they can, you know, really understand and apply this skill in all sorts of different situations.
Yeah, no, I love it. Such an important part of human performance. I mean, let's just leave sport. Sport's just one small part of it. We're talking with John Stevenson, registered psychologist and mental performance consultant from zoneperformance.ca. John, such a great conversation here. Before we go here, before I let you go, and I think we could talk for hours here, but I just wanted to get into diagnosis, understanding what's going on. So something's not right. You know it's not right. getting the right diagnosis is so, so important. And, you know, I think like a lot of things, we tend to, I don't want to say take the easy road. And you sort of alluded to the prescription drugs and the place they have right now. But with the technology we now have available, why wouldn't we go in and get a real clear idea of what's going on so we can come up with the best possible treatment plan? I mean, it just makes sense to me now with this new technology that we have in terms of being able to map the mind, understand what's going on. And we're not talking about just understanding injuries and injured parts of the brain. We're talking about how certain parts of the brain are functioning real time on a regular basis. And it's all trainable now.
Well, and I know there's going to be some people upset when I say this, but there's been a lot of people that have come through my office where they have been misdiagnosed. They have been given medication that wasn't warranted. And I personally feel that in the next 20 years, where you're just doing behavioral observation and doing questionnaires to make a diagnosis, is going to be obsolete. Mm-hmm. Functional MRIs, QEGs, the brain scans, the SPECT exam that Dr. Daniel Amen used. This technology is just going to get better and better and better, and it's going to improve. And, you know, functional MRIs are showing a lot of, you know, really promising results. And I think that's what you're going to see more and more, that when people are feeling a certain way, that we have this technology that can allow us to truly make an accurate assessment and, more importantly, do things that we can do to, you know, in a natural, you know, and again, it's not, you know, some people will need medication, they'll warrant it. But I also want to just let people know out there that there's other non-pharmaceutical natural ways that we can work to help people to optimize their health and their well-being, and, you know, from a sports psych perspective or a mental, like, to ultimately help their performance, whether it be in the business world or the sports world or just life in general.
Yeah, and even in conjunction with some of those very, very important medications, actually being actively involved in your rehabilitation or attacking a problem can be very, very powerful as well, right, Johnny?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you're right. You said the key word, actively participating. It's that they want to feel better. And I think a lot of people don't know that there are things out there that can help them. And I just want to let people know that there is this type of research and work that's being done, and they can get access to it.
Yeah, great stuff. John, thank you so much for your time today. Just a tremendous, tremendous conversation on the mental performance side of human performance. Such great stuff. John Stevenson, registered psychologist, mental performance consultant, zoneperformance.ca, if you want to get in touch with John and get some more information. John, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Have a great day.
There you have it. John Stevenson, everybody. You can go to zoneperformance.ca if you have questions for John, or if you want to follow up with him. You can also write to us at crushperformance.com. Listen, we've got to get out. Fantastic conversation today. We are going to be attacking human performance and organizational performance in 2019, and the mental part of human performance is so important. And we're going to try to get a better understanding and share it with you as we work our way through 2019 here. So again, thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you want to get the podcast, go to our website, crushperformance.com. Share it with your teammates, your workmates, your employees. A really, really important conversation today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Crush Performance.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the big pep rally number 2 that All Elite Wrestling had just a couple of days ago from Las Vegas. And the big news there is that the wait is over. Kenny Omega is part of All Elite Wrestling. And, like, I don't think anybody thought he wasn't going to be. But, you know, I know that there's other companies that went at him pretty hard with pretty amazing offers. So we got confirmation on that. So it looks like it'll be at Double or Nothing. It'll be Kenny Omega against Chris Jericho and the Young Bucks against the Lucha Brothers. I guess Pac against Hangman Page. But yes, Kenny Omega is now officially with All Elite Wrestling. And there's rumors about some guys in WWE whose contracts are up. We know Dean Ambrose is leaving. Nobody really knows if he's going anywhere, just needs some time out because he's burnt out. But yeah, there's AJ Styles still hasn't said he signed, and the Usos are talking about. So it's funny listening to the guys talk as I was driving with a bunch of the guys, I won't mention who they are, about how much money's out there and all these different companies throwing money at guys, better terms. There's companies that are throwing the same amount as NXT is, but you could do less dates and you get a much bigger merchandising percentage. So for those who don't want to work a lot of dates and want a bigger piece of the merchandise table, might be better off not going to NXT.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.